morning. As you look around, you'll notice that there are several folks traveling, not with us today. I bring that up because one of them, I was going to blame for what I was getting ready to do, but he's not here because he's traveling. So we're going to change it up just a little bit, and I'm actually going to start off by reading scripture. Are we all okay? We're all right? I'm going to read from 2 Samuel. I think you'll be familiar with the story. When Uriah's wife heard that her husband Uriah was dead, she mourned for her husband. And after the time of mourning was over, David sent for her and brought her back to his house. So she became his wife and bore him a son. But what David had done was evil in the Lord's eyes. So the Lord sent Nathan to David. And when Nathan arrived, he said, there were two men in the same city, one rich, one poor. The rich man had a lot of sheep and cattle, but the poor man had nothing, just one small ewe lamb that he had bought. He raised that lamb, and it grew up with him and his children. It would eat from his food, and it would drink from his cup, even sleep in his arms. It was almost like a daughter to him. Now, a traveler came to visit the rich man, but he wasn't willing to take anything from his own flock or herd to prepare for his guest who had arrived. Instead, he took the poor man's ewe lamb and prepared it for his visitor. David got very angry at the man, and he said to Nathan, as surely as the Lord lives, the one who did this is demonic. He must restore the ewe lamb seven times over because he did this and because he had no compassion. You are that man, Nathan told him. My message today is entitled, Young Before His Time. Young, as it's used in the title, is referring to Carl Jung. Now, many of you might be familiar with the writings and the legacy of Carl Jung. He was an important figure in the foundation of psychology. And in religious circles, Jung is typically regarded even more highly than Sigmund Freud. And that's because while Freud took a sort of pessimistic view of the spiritual experience, Jung thought that all forms of religious expression and spirituality help give us paths towards psychological well-being. And recently we've even seen studies that report that that kind of idea, as we've discovered, that people are typically found to live longer and healthier lives if they are spiritual. He was really actually quite prolific. Jung's body of work covers the concepts as varied as archetypal images, the collective unconsciousness, dream analysis. He even put thought into the ideas and the significance of UFO sightings. But why is he in a talk about King David? Well, because of one of his more interesting insights into psychology. It's had an impact on both the story we just heard and how we might apply this story to ourselves. His insight is this. Everything that irritates us about others can lead to an understanding of ourselves. Let me say it again. Everything that irritates us about others can lead to us to an understanding of ourselves. Now, hold on to that, because it's going to be pretty important in our looking at the scripture reading that we've just heard. In our reading today, we have a story of a king and a prophet. Now, just about every king seems to have a prophet there to supposedly keep him honest. Saul had Samuel, Ahab had Elijah, Hezekiah had Isaiah, Jehoiakim had Zebediah. It goes on and on. And then David had Nathan. Now, being a prophet, it's tough. Prophets are called to speak the truth, And sometimes the truth is not so popular. It's not only difficult to speak the prophetic word, but it can be dangerous. Being a prophet for a king is even worse. See, David is king. He has an army at his disposal. Nathan's a prophet. He has no army. David's powerful. His generals will carry out any order. Nathan has no generals at his disposal. David has a sword. Nathan has no weapon other than his spoken word. If David had desired, he could have ended Nathan in a heartbeat. As I said, it's dangerous being a prophet. It is even more dangerous being a prophet to a king. When Nathan speaks as prophet to David, he does so at great risk to himself. But he is a prophet. His task is to speak the truth. The personal consequences ultimately aren't to be weighed by him, which is a problem. You see, kings are used to getting whatever they want. And what they want tends to be less of what's good for the kingdom and more of what's good for the king. David desires Bathsheba. He gets what he wants. Bathsheba ultimately has no say. David successfully got rid of her husband Uriah the Hittite by assigning him to frontline duty where he was taken down by the enemy. David proceeds to marry Uriah's beautiful young widow, Bathsheba. And now, the honeymoon had barely been over when Nathan comes around to describe a hardship case that he thought David might want to do something about. Now, of course, what's really going on is Nathan has to give David some pretty difficult truths. If Nathan does it, no one else is going to. So, David's acted treacherously, dishonestly, selfishly. And he believes that because he is king, he's entitled to what is off limits to other people. And it's Nathan's task to tell him otherwise. His task is to remind the king that those who administer justice aren't allowed to be unjust. As a ruler, he is to execute the law, not trample on it. So, Nathan tells the heart-wrenching story of two men, one with more than enough, the other with very little. And while the rich man has flocks and herds in abundance, the poor man only has one lamb that not only provided milk, sustenance, but companionship. The rich man needs to entertain this travel. The code of hospitality of the day actually demanded it. But he's too stingy to take from his own vast flock. And so he steals the poor man's beloved lamb and slaughters it to feed his guests. David's justifiably angry, and he's ready to exact justice on the wealthy man who's behaved in such an evil manner. Then David's anger was greatly kindled against the man. And he said to Nathan, "As the Lord lives, the man who has done this deserves to die. He shall restore the lamb fourfold because he did this thing and because he has no pity." Nathan was tasked the difficult chore of confronting the king. And as the story is told, he had to accuse the king of not doing what it is that God expects from kings. David could have taken Nathan's head off with merely a nod of his own head. Nathan was in a very difficult situation. Now, fortunately, Nathan seems to have understood young, long before there was an actual young. He understood that it is true that everything that irritates us about others can lead us to an understanding about ourselves. He understood this reality about humanity, and he used it to allow David to confront himself. He tells the story of the two men. How the one with everything took away the most valuable thing from the one who had almost nothing. And then he waits. He waits for the reality that everything that irritates us about others can lead to an end. And when it does, David hit the roof. He said, "Anybody who would pull a stunt like that ought to be taken out and killed. At the very least, He ought to be made to give back four times what the lamb was worth. And who was this greedy, thieving slob anyway? He wanted to know. And then Nathan said to David, look in the mirror. You are the man. The king's court must have fallen silent. My question for us today isn't about being prophetic. My question isn't even about justice and treating others fairly and with respect, at least not directly. My question for us today is this. How often are we safe? Jung would tell us it happens a lot. Every time we find ourselves being irritated with someone else, Jung tells us that we are irritated by them because looking at them is like looking in a mirror. The things that irritate us about them are the things that irritate us about us. There is a depth of lessons to be learned in this wonderful story. But one of the ones which is almost overlooked is the one Jung tried to reteach us. If you take it seriously, it will change everything about how you relate to people. When you start realizing that each irritation is an opportunity to turn inward and do some tough personal work rather than turn outward and attack the person in some way, when we manage to do that, we find that not only are we getting along with more people more frequently, but we're also improving ourselves. And if we improve ourselves, we also find that we are getting irritated with other people less frequently. And when we aren't irritated with other people as frequently, we become happier people. And when we are happy, it is easier for us to do more loving of others. And when we are more loving to others, we create a better world. Turns out that young guy wasn't just teaching us how to make ourselves better. He was teaching us how to make the world better. Everything that irritates us about others can lead to an understanding of ourselves. The next time you feel that frustration raising up, take a moment. Take a breath. Think about what it might say about you, not about them. And begin to make yourself and ultimately the world a better place. Today we'd like to give you the opportunity to respond to today's message or to share any thoughts that are related. Those who want to share with the spiritual community.
My name is Lena, and a friend of mine gave me a short psychology, and she said, "You spot it, you got it."
That's great. I like it.
I see it in someone else.
Yep.
It's that mirror.
There's something about that that's in you, which is that you don't like usually. Yeah. Are there others? I like that. Spot it, you got it. Ha ha.